Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. You know I'm a big fan of enjoying life while still being smart financially. That's why I love ButcherBox. I can get a variety of high-quality meat, seafood, chicken, and pork at an amazing value, all with exclusive member deals delivered to my door with free shipping always. One thing I just never wanted to cut out of my spending plan is eating good food. And with ButcherBox, I don't have to, and neither do you. Where else can you get free protein for a whole year? Yes, you heard that right. One of my favorite go-to dinners is a salmon bowl. I'm not even a huge salmon lover, but ButcherBox's wild-caught salmon is oh so good. I make a nice little marinade, saute some veggies, cook the salmon, and throw in some Weiss. And it is an amazing dinner. If you want to take less trips to the grocery store and always have prepared meat in the freezer for a lot less money, you need ButcherBox in your life. Sign up at butcherbox.com/ETM and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/ETM. Hey, I'm Shauna Compton Game. This is Millennial Money, and today we're taking a journey into the Stockholm food scene.
Millennial Money with Shauna Compton Game. It will expand your brain.
Hey there, and welcome to another edition of Travel Tuesday. Today we're going to talk more about Stockholm, and we're actually going to go deeper into the Stockholm food scene and how different and how diverse it is there. We're going to talk to a few different award-winning chefs, Michelin star award-winning chefs, and some locals, as well as one of the hottest burger places in town. So I've been traveling to Stockholm for over 10 years now, and it is really, the food scene there has just really grown, and now it's so much more diverse. There's so many more award-winning restaurants, Michelin star award-winning restaurants, and restaurants that are recognized all around the world as some of the best restaurants. And what has to do with it, a lot of Swedish chefs came back from working abroad, opened up, really great restaurants. And it's also very different too. It's not just a fine dining and white cloth kind of dining. It's the very diverse restaurants, and so today we're going to have some of those chefs and others speak on the food scene. And so that was your first trip to Stockholm, and our first two meals we didn't even eat Swedish food. We had Persian food and Greek food. So were you surprised how different and diverse the food scene was there?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of expected I'd be eating some weird animal meat that I didn't, you know, recognize. But I was happy to note that there were lots of different restaurants and, you know, lots of different food options depending on what you like to eat. I mean, it reminded me of, you know, LA or New York or Chicago, you know, a big city with just a very diverse population. And that was obviously represented in the food as well.
Yeah. I mean, now, because I've been traveling there for so many years, there's actually a lot of restaurants there I love so much. And our new friend at Flippin' Burgers, now that was just an amazing burger, and we'll get more into that in a few minutes. One of my favorite restaurants there I absolutely adore, and that was our last meal that we had there. It was a place called Eat, which is a Asian restaurant, mainly Chinese restaurant. And it's literally one of my favorite Chinese food in the world, next to San Francisco. I absolutely adore this place, and I've been there a couple times. Chef Daniel Frick, who's one of the owners, has become a friend. So it's just so diverse and different. So we wanted to showcase a lot of those things. So our first stop on our tour around the Stockholm food scene, we talk with owner and creator of Flippin' Burgers, John Widegren. As he talks about how he came up with his special recipe for his awesome burgers, and Flippin' Burgers is actually one of the hottest burger places in Stockholm. There's actually a lot more other burger places that have popped up in the last, say, 4 to 5 years there now, and including some food trucks and what. So here is John talking about his tour, his burger tour around the U.S., as well as how he came up with the concept of the restaurant. So why did you guys start a burger place in Stockholm?
Well, I think it was a combination of a few things. Mostly, I was very frustrated with the burgers that we had here. I spent some time in the States. I had an internship in San Diego back in 2005. And before that, maybe 5 years earlier, visited New York and just kind of always missed the burgers you get there. When you are at home, and I couldn't quite figure out what was the problem, because you could find burgers in a lot of restaurants. You can never find a burger joint that only sold burgers and proper burgers, and obviously we had the big chains and stuff. So it was a frustration for me. At the same time, I had sort of a life crisis. I was turning 30 and wanted to do something different with my life. I was a management consultant. I just wanted to do something proper, work with my hands. So it sort of coincided to this idea of why not just open up a small place and try to do it the right way. I had no clue how the right way would be, though, so I had to do a lot of research. And eventually I went over to the States again and had a little burger tour.
Which, that's a nice tour.
Yeah. So all the pictures you see on the walls here are from my trip. Just small joints.
Right. In and out or places like that.
Yeah, we always make an exception for in and out Shake Shack.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly.
Have they have Stockholmers embraced the burger culture?
Yeah. It's been crazy, almost to the point that I think a lot of us grew a bit tired of it, because what I wanted to sort of promote was a feeling of, why don't you treat burgers the same way you would any food if you're a restaurant? Cook it, not just heat it up. Ground the meat yourself, have a fresh baked bread and all that stuff. But in the process, I think it also came a development with a lot of other places opening up, and it became almost too serious. So it sort of went full circle. It's like, it's only food, come on. So it's been crazy. When we started, I can honestly say that there wasn't one place in Sweden that was a proper burger joint, that only sold burgers and beers, of course, and did the food from bottom up. Now I would say in Stockholm there's at least, I would say, 30 places. In Sweden I think it's 100 plus, and that's just in the past 5 years. I mean, you've seen it in all the major cities, at least in the Western Hemisphere. So I think it was a large trend that has to do with a lot of things. I'm just babbling here.
No, it's good.
No, but like about 7 to 10 years ago, the restaurant scene sort of shifted here. Do you think that has been the embrace, too, of why there's like so many different burger places and also so many other different kinds of cuisine around the city?
I think if you're talking about the switch from what you could say from fine dining to fun dining, mm-hmm. and the whole of bringing down everything what the restaurant is supposed to be, absolutely, it's a part of that. Also, the upgraded street food business, like a reflection of that trend as well. But then we have some specific, I would say, country-specific denominators, if you want. First of all, we have never had any good street food in Sweden. A big difference if you're in the States, if you go into a diner or a hole in the wall or whatever, which you can do in a lot of parts of the world, especially Asia. You can find good food from, like, what you would call mom-and-pop places. We never had that here. So in Sweden, it's almost been like you could tell by the look of the place if they're going to serve decent food. And by the look of the place, I mean it needs to look decent. Whereas in most parts of the world, it's the opposite. If it looks a bit shabby and run down, it's probably good, because otherwise people wouldn't go and eat there, because
right.
You're not going there for the interior. But the restaurants in Sweden has been more like an advertisement for residential
right.
projects. So I think there's a few things flowing around there that sort of all mix together in this overall trend. But absolutely, the restaurant scene has shifted here. It has become cheaper, plus the quality has been raised. So I think it's a lot of good things that has happened.
Right. And how did you guys start out here?
How did it start? I struggle, and then we open.
I mean, did you guys start off a smaller location or a food truck?
It was a smaller location.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the. I mean, when you start out, the hardest thing is to find a place that you can afford.
Mm.
So I was a bit lucky and find a secondhand lease. So it was a restaurant, but it moved out, and the guy who rented out the place said, "You can rent it from me without like." Buying the place. So it was a small place. It's only like 10 minutes from here, but it was even more like off the beaten track. I think the strategy I had, because I had no budget and had an off location, was to sort of build awareness of what are we doing here, and also felt that it was a need to not educate but at least inform people of. Because I think a lot of Swedes had a view of, they knew what a good burger was, but actually we didn't. We didn't have a clue. So it was also a way for me to sort of explain to people what I'm trying to do. So I set up a blog, and I grinded a lot of meat in my kitchen.
you probably tasted a lot of burgers during the process, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
trying to hone the recipe.
Absolutely. And then kind of when I was feeling, okay, now I got this under control, then I went to the States for, like, the burger tour. And it went on for 6-7 weeks, and I had, like, 2-3 burgers a day. But what I took with me mostly from that trip was the tradition and the way you make it so simple, and the thing I was talking about, you don't need the whole thing with the concept and interior and whatever. I mean, a lot of the classic burger joints you guys have is just a bunch of people standing in a wear-out T-shirt and a baseball hat cooking burgers.
And
that was sort of the feel I was looking for.
Yeah.
And also to put the product first.
Right. When you walk in here, you kind of feel real comfortable.
Cool.
Yeah, at least that's what I would think. I mean, is that what Swedes kind of feel too, or at least they're sort of warming up to that now?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think Swedes, we are very design oriented, yeah. And we I think a lot of us like beautiful things, nice things to look at. But I also feel that when you go out to a restaurant, there's a difference in if the place sort of symbolizes a concept or a feeling or where it's too formal. You kind of sit up straight and you become like this. And, and the thing here, I think, you can come in here in your sweatpants on a Saturday afternoon and just have a few beers. Or you can stand in the bar on a Friday night and feel a bit of a pulse. And I think the interior has a lot to do with that. So we have a insurance policy for comfortable interiors here. Is that I design the place, and that makes it look kind of ugly enough.
So what's your top burger here?
The top burger is, or is it type?
A top, like what's the biggest
most
seller?
Popular.
Yeah, most popular.
I would say it's the signature burger, Flippin, which is a double cheeseburger. We have a bit of white onion in the bottom bread with mayo, and then just some mustard and ketchup on top. And the reason for that was when I was trying out burgers, I always ordered double cheeseburgers with nothing on them, because that sort of is the ultimate test if it's something to have.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah. And that was another thing. I mean, burgers in Sweden used to be, they had so much thing on them to hide the fact that the bread and the patty was just
crap. Right.
Yeah. So I said, let's start this from where it's supposed to be. A double cheeseburger needs to be freaking good. Otherwise, there's no point. And then what happened to me was, after a few bites, if there was some mustard and ketchup on the table, I would put it on, and maybe some mayo if you had, and I always missed onions. So that was the sort of signature burger came along. And then we have another burger that we call Burglar, which is just a ripoff of the old McDonald's.
the Hamburglar.
And that's just a classic, like, West Coast, maybe the original chain burgers. Okay. I mean, some iceberg lettuce, some tomato, and our own burger dressing, like a Thousand Islands Tylo spread.
Right.
Was there like a burger in particular when you were doing the States tour where you're like,
"This is
that's,
it"?
Yeah. That's it.
It was a couple of them. I think I'm always impressed with Shake Shack, with the volumes they're handling and what they're doing and the consistency. But I would say it was a place in Atlanta called Holman and Finch, which they had sort of interpreted the classic cheeseburger. It was just two patties, cheese, their own pickle, maybe it was caramelized onions on it, but that was it. And the bread was, because you know a lot of these fancy burgers have this like brioche type bread, and then you have on the other scale, you have the Martin's potato roll, and they had sort of a mix in between them, and that was what we aimed for with our bread as well. So that burger was ridiculously good. But then they had this thing that they only served, like, I think it was 24 burgers a night. And they called them out at 10 o'clock. So, and that was for them to, like, maintain the quality. And what we have learned here is that, I wouldn't say anyone, but almost anyone can make a decent burger. The real challenge is to have the burger being decent every day of the week for, like, 100 and 100 and 100. Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
I heard your guys' boozy shakes are really good, too.
Yeah, they're quite okay. There's no secret there. It's Ben & Jerry's ice cream and milk. That's all that's in them.
Right.
So what's kind of, like, the evolution? Like, do you want to build more locations, or...?
No, I kind of decided from the beginning that... I mean, first of all, it was only going to be that place that we had down there, the small... like hole in the wall thing, and then I had to sort of rethink, because there was a lot of trouble, problems with the location as such, with wiring and ventilation, all that boring stuff. So then we needed to move, and when we moved, we sort of decided, okay, we need to be a bit bigger, because it was kind of chaotic down there. So, but then we moved here, and I said, okay, this is it. It's only going to be one Flippin' Burgers. And we're going to stick to that, but we have a few other projects going. We have built a production kitchen, so we can make... What we do now is we grind our own beef, we have a freshly baked bread every day, and that's organic, and we have a very strict policy on what kind of beef we buy. And we have a craft-made organic burger cheese that a small family dairy had sort of developed for us. So as far as the cheeseburger, we're like, okay, now we're done with that. We still don't make our own ketchup. We don't make our own mustard, that kind of stuff. So we want to take the next step. So that's why we're building the production kitchen, to make more stuff ourselves. And in next to the production kitchen it's a big space that we're going to turn into, I would say, a beer hall, but more like an American style than maybe a German style. So, and that we're going to serve our sliders there that we have in our food truck, which is, it's more or less the mini version of the Wittenberg. And then we have a hot dog joint that we're planning. So we're going to do a little expansion, but it's just going to be that for now.
Right.
And it's actually more to, when we moved here, we needed some more structure and routines and administration. So we have an office down the street. We have an HR manager and a finance manager and that kind of stuff. So it became like, okay, we're too small to be this big and we're too big to be this small. So now we're going to have a more stable platform.
Right.
But we're going to stick to the fact that this is not going to be a chain.
Right.
I think there's enough chains out there.
Right.
And also when you big, when you do the franchise model, I mean, somewhere along the line you have to standardize to the point that you lose the sort of the excitement,
right.
And you also, I think, it's really hard to keep an even consistent quality. And that's why I'm so impressed with Shake Shack. And there's no, you guys in the States, I think you have, obviously you have a lot of chains that are crap, but you have a lot of, I would say, more premium style franchises that can sort of hold it together.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in Sweden.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
Do they do a lot of franchising in Sweden? I mean, is that, yeah, is that a concept that...
Yeah, they do. They do. But it's more like the big international brands.
Right.
Yeah. I think how your guys' process about having local growers and stuff like that, that's also the shift in the cuisine here in,
yeah,
in Stockholm and Sweden all around right now.
Absolutely.
People are... So many great restaurants are doing that and stuff. Yeah. So...
Yeah, and I think that... I think the influence for that has come mostly from outside because... and it's a very, I think, welcome development. You have to understand that a lot of things in Sweden has been big business oriented, and you have like the meat industry, for example. It has been focused towards efficiency and hygiene. So as long as it's efficient and hygienic, nobody cares about quality. And that goes for the authorities, the big meat suppliers, and also I would say the farming universities and the research, and everyone is just geared towards that thing. So I think the trend now with like small scale butchers starting to come, obviously the microbrewery trend and whatever. If you go back 5-10 years ago, maybe it was 10 breweries in the whole of Sweden, and there's still only, I think, a tenfold of butchers. So it's still, like, very large scale. Especially for being such a... I mean, we're quite... the distances in Sweden are not... I mean, quite a... Not a big country, but in space.
Right.
I mean, from the north of Sweden to the south of Sweden, that distance is... what is it? 1,800 kilometers. So if you have a slaughtery, yeah, it's going to be a lot of transports. And,
right.
Yeah. So right. I think that's a very cool development that everyone is sort of going back to seeing what they can find in the local areas.
Right, right, right. Why do you think Stockholm is a great city for people to come visit?
I mean, the simple answer, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It is. I remember when I... finished my university studies, I was in Australia for a year, and I was just blown away by Sydney. I thought it was just amazing. And then I came back from Australia, I moved to Stockholm, and I was like, well, this isn't half bad. I mean, Stockholm in the summer, it's up there. It's beautiful. Now it's, yeah, at least you got a little sunlight almost.
Yeah, it's been nice. It's been nice the last few days.
Yeah. But... I think it's a beautiful city, and it's very convenient to get around. The public transport is really good, at least when they clear the streets from snow, which they don't. But
okay, so next we have top TV chef Nicholas Ekstedt, who is the owner and chef at his restaurant, Ekstedt, which is a one-star Michelin star award-winning restaurant. He's going to talk about the Swedish diner and the different... the differences there that they have, and also some of the ventures that he has coming up in the future with his future restaurants.
We usually compare the Swedes to Japanese, you know. We're very, like, unforgettable. Like, if you don't do a good thing...
Right, like a bad dish.
Dish or a bad waiter or, right. like, they'll... Thanks for the meal. They maybe even tip, but they'll never come back.
Wow. Yeah.
And they won't say anything. They're not like Americans who are like, this is horrible, you know, or like, terrible dish, you know. The Swedes were just like... Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Will not be recommended nor coming back here.
But they silently, like, kill you.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a big difference. But, you know, they're very, like, open to new things. Because of Scandinavia not being originally a culinary destination, we're kind of we have to build a reputation. So, in Europe, I usually compare countries with, you know, wine-producing countries and non-wine-producing countries are two different culinary scenes. So if you look at, like, Scandinavia, the Benelux countries in Great Britain, you know, we don't originally grow wine. Now, thanks to climate change, we kind of can start growing them. But historically, we haven't been able to do it. And then the culinary scene has been completely different. We haven't had this kind of, like, rooted culinary heritage like you have in Italy and France. So... The difference here is that people don't have a culinary kind of history from their childhood. Mm. Of course, they have memories of their mom and dad cooking for them, but they don't have, like, strong identity to one culinary history. Right. So they're way more open to new things. And that's what's great about cooking in Sweden. So if I put an extra ingredient into my dish, or if it's not completely 100% Swedish, people are still, still find it interesting. They'll say, like, oh, this is nice. This is like veal, but cooked with juniper berries. Oh, usually, I mean, maybe originally you would have done it with allspice, but then I changed once. You could never do that in Italy.
They would be like... Yeah.
They won't eat it. You know? Yeah. Like, it's like, it's you know, Massimo Bottura, the famous Italian chef, he says, like, cooking in Italy is like throwing a stone into the water and making the circles into squares. That's how hard it is.
Right.
We are in a way much easier position in Sweden. We have a much more open and friendly customer.
So are there any other, like... you know, with the success of this restaurant, are there any other projects that you...
Yes, well, I really want to go to the UK, kind of like, yeah, so I would love to have a restaurant there as well. I have a lot of friends in London, and I've spent a lot of time there, and my parents lived there a short time when I was a kid as well, so we lived there for a year when I was a child, and I have my brothers there, and so it's like... That I'm looking to, maybe to have something in England.
And eventually. That's just a whole different culinary scene then?
Yes, I mean, it is very different. London is super, super competitive, and it's a difficult city to cook in. And I would like to give it a go.
Yeah, give it a try.
Yeah, I would like to try. At least, I mean, this American friend told me once that you Swedes are so lucky. You have the best insurance company in the world. It's called Sweden.
Right. Yeah.
And it's kind of true. I never thought of it, but it's true. It's kind of like, you can really fuck up anywhere, but you still can always move back to Sweden.
Right, yeah.
Right.
So that is very true.
Yeah. The hospitals and the school system and everything is just like, well, you know, you could be broke here and still kind of comfortable.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. Yeah.
But do you think with this restaurant you kind of hit your stride as a chef?
Yes, definitely.
Like,
yeah.
And you discovered a whole other side of yourself.
Of course. It was definitely my...
It was there.
Yes. I mean, it was there, and I had, of course, a platform, and maybe it would have been difficult for someone else to pull it off, like financially, to get the money going and stuff like that, but it was definitely my comeback and my international breakthrough, definitely, yeah.
Right.
Before this, I mean, people in Sweden knew who I was, or like, there were people kind of like in the culinary world who knew me, but I mean, it was after this, I kind of like, I go abroad and, you know, I talk at food events and I'm invited to different events all over the world.
Right.
So it was definitely something that was made me a new career.
Right, right.
And very comfortable with that.
How do you collaborate with your chefs then on coming up with a different menu and stuff like that? Because you guys seasonally change your menu, right?
Yes. So, I mean, we work permanently on changing the menu seasonally, of course. But also in the technical aspect. So we like trying to work on either techniques that we used to work with that we try to bring back in a different way, or we try to research new techniques that usually are forgotten techniques. Right. And there's so many techniques out there, cooking-wise, because if you look at cooking, you know, without electricity, of course, it's a way longer period. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, they've found, you know, I think they talk about cooking and fire being older than, you know, Homo sapiens,
right,
you know,
right,
being
right,
like
right.
really old. It's
right,
like
right, right.
before us,
yes.
there was still
dinosaur
like
time.
Before
yes.
us, there was fire cooking,
yeah.
you know. And so, I mean, of course, that's it's been there for some. So there's periods of, I mean, so cooking with fire and cooking with cast iron, and as we do with birch, we've done that historically for such a long time in Sweden, so even the history has different techniques. So if you look at the 1700, they had a completely different cooking technique,
right.
because back then, 1700 is a really interesting time in Sweden, because it was so influenced by the French cooking, like the whole royal family was French, and it was a very big French period, and they really didn't like the flavor of grilled. They liked cooked things back then, and you can really see that in recipes, that when the fire was on, they didn't want the smokiness to come into to the flavor. They didn't use fat that much because they didn't want the taste, because that was the taste of poverty,
right.
you know.
Right.
It was like,
right.
because there was a fire everywhere,
right.
you know, every house was,
sure.
was heated with fire, and every stove was heated by fire. So they wanted, you know, to exclude that. They wanted
right.
the cook, if a fine cooking back then was
yeah.
something that didn't taste of grill and didn't taste of fire.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, completely different from what we do today in a modern grill. You know,
right.
you want it to taste like charcoal, you
right.
know, you even would
right.
spray it with
right.
the
charcoal.
Right.
Yeah.
yeah, exactly.
You infuse it with
yeah.
a smoke pistol.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah,
yeah.
So it's super interesting to go back in history and see how cooking kind of like changes with fashion. And so you can look into that period of cooking, and then you could find odd techniques that they use then, and then we try to put them back into this contemporary kitchen.
Right.
Yeah. But the most difficult part for us is that we wanted to look modern on the plate, right? Because you know, coming here is not like going to the museum.
Yeah,
it's supposed
right.
to be high-end cooking,
right?
right.
Because
right.
you know, otherwise, this just wouldn't be a point having
right.
you know. So I usually say that we're this kind of like we're a restaurant competing against motor yachts with the sails.
right, right.
<'Cause>, so it's, but it's fun. It's a
right.
lot of fun. Yeah.
So next up, we spoke with our friend Jacob Johansson, who we had on the last Stockholm episode. And Jacob talks about some of his favorite places to eat around the city in Stockholm.
What are like some of your favorite things to do in Stockholm?
Well, I eat a lot. I eat my way through the city. We have so many great chefs, and I think we talk a lot about sustainability and products in food that are produced nearby, environmentally friendly. And I think since we talk so much about it, we're starting to have also a very strong food culture here. I think we appreciate food and enjoy food in a much larger sense. We have so many great chefs here. Even if you go to Matthias Dahlgren at Grand Hotel, which is fantastic, it's mind-blowing, or you go to Lilla Ego up in Vasastan, which is fantastic. You need a 3-month reservation except for 8 spots in the bar, which you can queue for half an hour, and I do that like every third month. It's a great spot to go to. Or these new shops in Södermalm. There's so much great food to enjoy. That and going to the ballet on the Royal Opera. That is fantastic. It's one of those things when you move here, maybe I'm still too young in that sense to enjoy. But if there's so many great things that you can try to enjoy if you really put your mind to it. So I've started out watching at least one ballet every 6 months. There's also cool dance companies and, well, a lot of short films that are produced here in Sweden as well that I think is, well, in comparison to international, the movie scene is quite strong.
Right, right. And wouldn't it surprise people, or do you think it would surprise people how diverse the food scene is here too? And how it's grown in the last 10 years?
Yeah, I think
years.
Independent of where you come from, you can find your own culinary cuisine here.
Yeah.
And that probably would surprise people when they just want to go looking for meatballs
right.
in every restaurant. And you have that a lot, of course, too. But I don't think the Swedish food are as specific as Japanese food or Korean food
mm-hmm.
or Kenyan food, which I love
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that, yeah, it might surprise people quite a lot.
Yeah.
But there's so much to try to evolve from the meatballs and lingonberries into even stronger and older traditions. Especially now around Christmas when you're
right.
here. You should try the julbord, which is translated into smorgasbord.
We're
going
to try to get to one, yeah. Yeah,
you really need to do that.
Yeah. I've experienced that during Christmas, so.
No, you have?
Oh, yeah.
You like it?
Oh, yeah, a lot, yeah. There's too much to eat.
And did you have surströmming? And then you have the board?
I did actually, yes.
Oh,
I tried
okay.
it. Not my thing, but I tried.
No, it's not anybody's thing. It's like two people
right.
from all our 8 million that enjoy that.
Keep serving it, yeah.
Yeah, it's the heritage.
Right.
What are some of the places you like to go hang out in Södermalm?
Well, I like Barumash, which is just like 2 blocks away from my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
They won some kind of award for strongest bar concept this year, but it's quite small. Maybe it would take 60, 80 people if it's extremely crowded,
mm-hmm.
but you can go there on a Tuesday night. It's still like great lighting, great
mm-hmm.
drinks, and the people there, even though it's the neighboring the bar or the bartender and are a great company.
Mm-hmm.
And around that area you have Paradiso, quite newly opened, and you have Hektet,
mm-hmm.
Which also has great food, but maybe it's the better place to go to after 10 p.m. To late at night. And then if you want to go clubbing around my hoods, you would go to Underbrun, which is in Sweden, in the summer it's called Trädgården, and then Trädgården closes down for the winters, and then they open up Underbrun.
Okay.
You go into an elevator, you have this plastic, almost like meat store thing,
right.
you have to go through, and the person driving the elevator has a Turkish hat on, and the music is very specific, but it's a nice thing. If you like these more... could you say maybe Berlin-inspired places
yeah.
to go to?
Yeah, yeah.
Because
right.
that's Södermalm is more like if you talk about Berlin or maybe the coolest area in Paris, whatever that
mm-hmm.
would be, or going to the Standard
mm-hmm.
in New York. The same kind of vibe and feeling
mm-hmm.
that is diverse
mm-hmm.
and is, well, a new experience
yeah.
in both bad and good ways.
Right. Okay, and lastly, on our tour around the Stockholm food scene, we spoke with 2-time Michelin star award-winning chef Magnus Ek, who actually will have a full interview coming up later on this week. He is the chef and owner at Oxen Krog and Slip. They're 2 different restaurants. One is the fine dining, which is Oxen Krog, and Slip is the bistro. So Magnus is going to talk about some of the things that might surprise you about the Stockholm food scene. People may think of like Stockholm as like meatballs and all that kind of stuff. What would surprise people when they come here about the different cuisines and the different choices that there are all around the city?
Oh, since I'm not outside, it's really hard to say what they're going to be surprised about. What people always tell me is that the general quality of the food here is really high. Like, it's not hard to get crappy food here, but it's like if you're looking around a little bit,
yeah.
it's easy to find good food.
Right.
And also a big variety of